again.
We are extremely glad that you're with us this morning. I need you to do something for me as we begin this portion of our service. I need you to reflect for a few moments on what may be the most difficult time of your life. Think for a few moments about a time where you asked legitimately and heartfelt the question, why, God, why are you letting this happen? Why are you allowing me to go through this? Why are you letting my family, Why is this happening? And have that in mind, and I'm going to answer the question, why? Okay, you have to know there is an answer to the question why, and the answer is you will have no idea. I will have no idea. The Bible does not give us an answer to that question, and it doesn't intend to. But what we're going to see in the story of Joseph is the story of someone who went through the worst time of his life, and it's a pretty bad time. I mean, your brothers hate you, so they waffle between killing you and selling you into slavery. That's a low point in life. You then get sent off into slavery, and you know the story, but the part we're looking at today, you work your best for the guy who's now your master, and you work hard, and you do your best, and then somebody falsely accuses you of doing something wrong, and you wind up in jail. This is a bad spot. But the Bible doesn't tell us, and God answered Joseph's question, why is this happening to me, with, let me tell you my plan. He doesn't ever tell him. And sometimes, just to appease our own curiosity, to make ourselves feel better, we try to come up with answers for someone else. Why is this happening to me, somebody says. And we try to give them an answer because we don't want to feel helpless. We don't want to feel in the dark. We don't want to leave them feeling alone. So we try to give them an answer. That is not a good idea. When the Bible doesn't give us an answer to a question, we shouldn't try to make one up for people. Because maybe the question that we're supposed to, or the answer we're supposed to come to in that question is, I don't need to know, but I've got a God who's with me. That's an answer, I guess, but it's not the answer that's easy to give people. We try to tell them, why is this happening? Well, because these things are going to come out of it. We don't know that. Joseph, as you recall, if you were here last week, we depicted Joseph in this idea of shining like a light in the universe, okay? Remember that. We are to, as people, shine like a star in the sky, a light in the dark, so that people see God through us. We can attest to Jesus through the way that we live, having lived a life that's vastly different than the world around us. Moral, living in a state of immorality or surrounded by immorality. Truthful, living surrounded by lies. That's what we are to be. Happy people, not complaining, not grumbling, according to the Philippians passage, surrounded by people who find it right to grumble and complain about all the things that go on. Joseph was not that light. In the story we looked at last week, he was not that man who stood apart from the culture around him. He was a man who looked just as bad as everyone else. Now, though, we get to see the Joseph that we're taught about. The Joseph who stands totally in contrast, the righteous young man who doesn't give in to sin. And because he doesn't give in to sin, what happens? His life goes into shambles. Because he's going to go from what he thought was the low point to really the low point. Genesis chapter 39. Not only is this a hard time in life, but as what happens for us, we frequently go from high points where possibly we don't interact well with the blessings God gives us, to low points because of our partially because of our bad interaction with them. Joseph was favored by his father. Joseph was given dreams showing him to be the one the others would bow down to. So out of arrogance, it seems, he told that to everybody else to make sure that they knew that he was going to be the king. He was going to be the high one. He was going to be the one that even his father would bow to. And then he dropped from that point to this point in Egypt. Genesis chapter 39. Now Joseph had been brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the guard, an Egyptian, had bought him from the Ishmaelites who had brought him down there. Now, do you know who the Ishmaelites are? We are not that far from Abraham, going down to Isaac, going down to Jacob, but do you know who the Ishmaelites are? The Ishmaelites come from the firstborn son of Abraham with not Sarah, right? So these are cousins, fourth generation down, but cousins who have bought Joseph from his brothers to sell him to somebody else. Just realize that's who it is. The Lord was with him. He was with Joseph, and he became a successful man, and he was in the house of his Egyptian master. His master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord caused all that he did to succeed in his hands. So Joseph found favor in his sight and attended him. And he made him, Potiphar made Joseph overseer of his house and put him in charge of all that he had. From the time that he had made him overseer of his house and over all that he had, the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. The blessing of the Lord was on all that he had in the house and in the field. So he left all that he had in Joseph's charge. And because of him, he had no concern about anything but what food he should eat. So there's where we now are. We now have Joseph in Egypt working for Potiphar. But not just working for Potiphar. So we've got this Joseph who was arrogant and unwilling to humble himself, even before his father. Chapters before, we don't know how much time elapsed here, but two chapters before, he was unwilling to show humility even to his father, and instead said, "You will all bow down to me as the most important." And now he's in the house of Potiphar as a slave. And he chooses to live in such a way that God shows favor to him. How exactly is that? We don't know. It didn't tell us. It just said that he found favor, God continued to cause him to succeed, and God was with him. There's the answer to the question. Why is this all happening? We don't know, but we know that God was with him. Now, we find out in chapter 45 and in chapter 50, we find out that God caused all of these things to happen. God sent him to Egypt ahead of his brothers. So God is at work in the background causing all of this to happen. And the answer then to why, we may never find out. Joseph maybe did find out. But it's not a guarantee to you. Well, it's not a guarantee to me that we will ever know the answer. But what we know is that God was still with him. But it's going to get worse. It is going to get worse for Joseph. See, now he's risen in the ranks of slaves to Potiphar. And he's now the head slave in a well-known, well-respected man's home. You would think that's where God was going to pull him into Pharaoh's court, right? This is an officer of Pharaoh, someone who knows Pharaoh. A high-ranking guy, probably living near Pharaoh. And God does not choose to take Joseph from there to Pharaoh. Instead, God uses a most convoluted system of taking Joseph to the high-ranking spot, which is not a guarantee, so please do not think that it is. But God uses a convoluted system to get him there through taking him as low as he can possibly take him, literally. That's where the jail would have been. So he's going to go down as far as he can so that in time God would raise him up at the right time. And what we'll see later is that that doesn't even happen on the timeline that would make sense to us. because Joseph is going to interpret dreams for people and then say, please don't forget me when you get out of here, because the dream shows you're going to get out. The guy gets out and boom, forgets about Joseph. So for 3 years, he stays in jail. 3 years longer, he stays in jail. But we're getting ahead of ourselves. But now God has Joseph. He's going to take him down there. And here's how it goes about. And this is where we see Joseph live like he's supposed to. We see Joseph be the hero we know him to be, starting here and moving on. Now, Joseph was handsome in form and in appearance. And after a time, his master's wife cast her eyes on Joseph and said, lie with me. But he refused and said to his master's wife, behold, because of me, my master has no concern about anything in the house. And he has put everything that he has in my charge. He is not greater in this house than I. That was weirdly worded. So I apologize for the horrible reading. There is no one in this house greater than I. Nor has he kept anything back from me except you, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? That's important. How can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? And as she spoke to Joseph day after day, he would not listen to her, to lie beside her, or to be with her. And here's where we see the shift in Joseph. And it's in a tiny little phrase that seems vastly out of place. It's absolutely true. But now we have Joseph trying to be seduced by this woman, his flesh probably wanting to give in. And instead he says to her, what? Your husband has put me in charge of everything. So how can I sin against God and do something wicked? Not how can I sin against your husband. Not how can I do this wrong thing, but how can I sin against God? And what we see in Joseph is now there has been seemingly a mind shift to God being the preeminent one in his life, the ultimate one in his life. Whereas before we saw Joseph thinking himself great and mighty, having to share with his brothers that he was going to be their ruler. And now we see him saying to this woman, how could I dare sin against God by doing something wicked with you? And he now lives that life out. Not only does he resist her once, but multiple times, day after day after day, she continues to try to get him to do what he knows is wrong. But he continues to choose to do what's right. And what is the reward he gets for it? The reward that he gets for it is a woman who's tired of being told no. Likely, a woman who's not told no very often. Not in a sexual sense, that's not what we're talking about. But she was the wife of a high-ranking official. In her house, what she said went. Why? Because she was the wife. But one day when he went, this is verse 11, but one day when Joseph went into the house to do his work and none of the men of the house were there in the house, she caught him by his garment saying, lie with me. But he left his garment in her hand and fled and got out of the house. And as soon as she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and had fled the house, she called to the men of her household and said, see, my husband has brought among us a Hebrew to laugh at us. He came in to lie with me, and I called out with a loud voice. And as soon as he heard that I lifted up my voice and called out, he left his garment beside me and fled and got out of the house. She's going to say the same thing to her husband. And her husband is going to not even listen to Joseph. According to this text, he never asks anyone to verify anything. His anger is kindled in the moment that his wife says, Joseph did something wrong to me, and he throws Joseph in jail. So now you've got a guy who not only has been put in slavery and then rightly did his best to honor God, the reward he got for it was to be kicked down further than he thought he could even go. And now he's in jail. That's the reward that you might get for living your life right. We have wrongly associated success with getting more. Sometimes that's the success that God gives us. Sometimes the success that God gives us for doing what's right is we get thrown in jail. Back to that time in your life when things didn't go well. Back to that time in your life when you wanted to ask God, or you did ask God, why are you doing this? Why are you allowing this? I hate it. Have I not been, which is usually something behind our words, we say, have I not been good enough? It doesn't have to do with you being good enough. It never has had to do with you being good enough. It has had to do with God working out his plan through you. And in Joseph's case, perhaps in yours, the way God is bringing about his plan to bring Joseph to be the man he wants him to be, for Joseph to be in the position he wants Joseph to be, Joseph needed to be knocked down further than he thought he could possibly go. For us, that may mean business-wise, we don't succeed. It may mean, as far as a pastor, the marker that people wrongly use for success is how many people sit in your seats on Sunday morning. If there are enough, you must be succeeding. You must be doing well. That's not markers for success. Or at least not the success the Bible calls us to. Because now God allows Joseph to be thrown in jail. God allows Joseph to have everything taken from him that he thought he had worked hard to earn. We don't know how long he was in Potiphar's house. Long enough to get moved up the ranks. Long enough to become Potiphar's most trusted person. In our heads, we think a couple days. At least that's what's easy. Maybe a month. But somebody doesn't become your most trusted person in the matter of a month. They become your most trusted person in the matter of years. Statistically, for a pastor, I show up at a church, any church that I'm ever going to be at, maybe God will allow this to be my last one. Some of you are saying yay, some of you are saying, oh, no. But the pastor shows up at a church, it takes roughly 3 years to gain the trust of people. So 3 years into being there, people actually trust that you're not trying to hurt them. 3 years. Maybe Joseph spent 3 years trying to get Potiphar to trust him. 3 years working hard. 3 years seeing God bless what he was doing and then had it stripped away. Maybe he had finally reached a point where this was the new norm. He had enough to eat. He had a place to live. He was okay. And then it all got taken away again. We don't know. Why don't we know? Because it doesn't say. We just know that it was. We just know that he was put in this position and God said, no, you're going here first. Maybe what God was doing was preparing the heart of Joseph to be who he was supposed to be when he gained power unimaginable to him. I don't know. But I do know that even in this moment when Joseph was thrown into jail, what does it say about God in his relation to Joseph? But the Lord, verse 21, but the Lord was with Joseph and showed him steadfast love and gave him favor in the sight of the jailer. Couple important things there. The first one being that God was still with Joseph. It hadn't changed. In fact, it's more emphatic. God was with Joseph and continued to show him steadfast love. Earlier, God was just with Joseph. Yahweh with Joseph. Now Yahweh with Joseph showing steadfast love, maybe more lavishly letting Joseph understand that he was there when Joseph chose to listen to it. But also, the jailer did not give favor to Joseph, but God caused the jailer to give favor to Joseph. That's more of a theological point than it is a practical point, but it's important to understand the theology behind it all. God has the ability to influence people. We gather together at 9:10 here every Sunday morning. have for a couple of years, roughly, we've changed the time a little bit, to pray that God would change this body, because we know that he is the one who influences us. I say the words that I say. We sing the words that we sing. We do the things that we do, but God is the one that causes us to change. And as soon as we forget that, we start to think, well, if I just work hard enough, I'll become the most favored person. If I just work hard enough, God will like me. If I just work hard enough, God won't do hard things to me. If I just work hard enough, he'll be happy. If I work hard enough, I'll succeed. If I work hard enough, if I work hard enough, if I work hard enough. But he is the one who influences people. So the work, if you want to call it work, that we're called to do is the work of depending on him to change us. Much like the crops growing in the field. I was looking at the corn on the way down. It seems to have grown a lot in the last couple of weeks. The corn didn't work hard to grow. God caused the corn to grow. That's what's happening. The corn isn't responsible for it. I've got somebody laughing at me, smiling at me. Oh, well. Just so you're all aware, it's Jordan, and he's going to have a genetic you're wrong thing later, which I will fully accept, but that's all right. But God is causing the corn to grow, and as it grows, he continues to be the one causing it to happen. And that's what we need to be as people. We need to be people who are depending on him to cause us to change. Because anything that we do on our own is us. And what he gives us is grace, unearned favor. What he gives us is mercy, the not getting what you deserve. You can't work for those. Because if you work for them, they're earned. And they're no longer free. They're no longer unmerited. And Joseph begins to learn that. As God takes him further and further down the line of importance. Maybe that's where you are. Maybe God has already started the process of letting you grow high and then cut you down to be who you're to be. Maybe you're still in the process of growing high and you've never learned the humility. Maybe you're in the process of, after having been pulled down, God is raising you back up to be who he wants you to be. That doesn't guarantee that you're going to get something good in the end other than him. Realize that. In this earth, you may never gain anything exceptional and wonderful. It may not happen. It might, but it's not a guarantee. What we see in Joseph is that the righteous life that he lived before Potiphar, before Potiphar's wife, before the jailer, did not give him an easy life. That's what happens. That's as much of a guarantee as we are given. The guarantee is that there's no guarantee on earth, which is why we have to change our perspective as people. Our perspective must be on, it must continue to be on, what we gain in heaven with him. And when our focus is on what we gain in heaven through his gracious gifts to us, all the things of this world fade away. They become unimportant. Why? Why do the things of this world become unimportant? Because they are. I'm relatively certain when I get to heaven, the getting in isn't going to require that I have a certain handicap in golf. I'm relatively certain God's not going to say, hey, did you ever buy a new car? Oh, yeah, see? You weren't able to buy a new car. I don't know if you can make it in. And beyond God not caring, I won't care. I won't care what I've gotten and what I've not on this earth. When I get there and get what he's giving to us. Because what he's giving to us in that time surpasses everything that we could get here by such a degree that it's going to make us not care Yet we will struggle here. We will struggle on this earth to learn the process of not caring. We will struggle on this earth to learn the process of valuing the right things, because we have been taught, as Western Americans, we have been taught to care about the wrong things. We define success by how much we accomplish. We define success by how busy we are. We define success by how much we've gotten. That's the success that we're taught to use as definitions of success. But that's not what it is. And what we see with Joseph here is God caused him to succeed, and his success did not bring abundance. I don't care how high you get when you're in prison. All you get is enough to scrape by. You don't get extra. Yet he spent years succeeding in prison by living right. The jailer gave him favor, but he didn't get extras. And too frequently we measure ourselves by the number of extras that we've gotten. Extra money, extra nice cars, extra ability at the things that we do, extra time, extra promotions, extra whatevers. And unless we get the extras, we tell ourselves, God must not care. So then when we lose the extras, it's frequently, all too frequently, when we start asking God, why did you do this to me? Why is my life so hard? My car isn't working. Why is my life so hard? I'm not doing as well in school or sports as I'd like to. Why did you do this to me? My business isn't doing as well as I want. Yeah, we have enough to eat, but it's not doing as well as I want. And we begin to get unhappy with God for not giving us the extras. Now, I realize some of the times that we struggle, it's because we're actually losing something that matters, the life of a loved one, the life of ourselves. Those are hard. They really are. But too frequently, our asking God why something happens comes about when we lose something extra that is of no value in eternity. And that's what causes us to get bent out of shape. It's amazing to me. It's absolutely amazing to me. And I fail at this. So please don't hear this as a, oh, Brock has this all figured out and he's telling me I stink. No, that's not what I'm saying. We as people usually do a far better job dealing with giant catastrophes in life than we do with very, very small ones. Very, very small ones get us totally wholly bent out of shape. And giant ones is where we step back and we say, I need to trust God. Why is that? Probably because the small ones we think we can control, which is a foolish idea, but it's what we think. We think, oh, I can handle this. I got this one on my own. I can do this. Oh, it's not working. God, why are you letting that happen? When really what we need to learn is to depend on Him even in those. We depend on Him in those. Giant ones happen and they hurt, okay? Don't get me wrong. These giant ones are awful. And you'll go through them and you'll never want to deal with it again. And then small ones come around and it shakes our faith. We become angry with God. We question why He did something, because things like our car don't work. Things like we're not as able as we used to be to do something that we don't really need to do. I remember I had a shoulder surgery, and I really struggled with, God, I may not be able to play basketball again. Maybe I shouldn't have played basketball again, if you know my life story. But I really struggled with that. I've got this surgery, and I'm not going to be able to play basketball. What's up with that? That is awful. No, Brock, it's basketball. That's all it is. If you don't get to play basketball ever again in your life, what have you lost? Absolutely nothing. But that's one of them that for me was really hard to wrestle through. It took me a couple months to wrestle through that topic in my own heart. Because I was unhappy that such a thing would happen, that maybe I wouldn't get to have an extra. I would only get what I needed. We need to be people who recognize our dependence on God for everything. We need to be people who trust Him to such a degree that when we lose the extras, what we say is, but God is still with me. He's still there. Regardless of what I lose, regardless of what I don't gain, regardless of any of that. And then when God pulls you through that, if He so chooses in this life to bring you back to where you've always wanted to be, the goal is that you had learned to trust Him more. That's what God's been about since the day He created this world. That you and I would trust Him more. That's why David writes, God, you don't want my sacrifices. You want my broken heart, my contrite heart over the sins that I've committed before you. Like Joseph says, how can I sin against God with you? And the focus had been shifted to trusting Him, to honoring Him, to developing that relationship with Him as he then saw God with him even when things went wrong. Maybe especially when things went wrong. As it's in jail that God showed him his steadfast love over the years of letting Joseph rot in jail. Let's pray. God, thank you for loving us. Thank you for giving us your Son to find grace in. Thank you for giving us your Son to bring us through these awful times in life to guarantee inheritance with you. God, I pray that you use Joseph's story of his life to remind us of what you've given and of who you are, to remind us that you're with us, to grow us and to change us. And I pray, Father, that your Son would be glorified in our hearts, that your Son would be glorified in our lives, and that we as people would be people who trust rightly. Take from us, Father, what we don't need and what's hindering us from following you the way we should. And bolster our understanding of your Son and who he is in our minds and in our hearts. We love you. Amen.